May it please the court. I'd like to be very clear from the outset about what is at issue here. We've sought the medical records from a testifying plaintiff in the Southern District of New York case, National Abortion Federation versus Ashcroft. While we seek the clinical medical information that are contained in those records, the medical presentation, the course of treatment, the government has absolutely no interest in any information that would identify the individual plaintiffs.
What is the status of your statement in your brief that you were reserving the right to later seek the names of the patients?
Well, Your Honor, that is just a standard reservation.
That doesn't help me.
Okay. The subpoena will be satisfied by providing redacted medical records. We have reserved the right, but I'm willing to say here with the trial 3 days from now or 4 days from now, we will not seek those. I will withdraw that reservation. And the only thing that the government is seeking at this point are the fully redacted medical records.
Has the doctor been given access to the records yet?
I've been told that the doctor has been given access to the records and has identified documents that respond to our discovery request to him. Our request to him was please identify the medical records that are responsive, and then the request to the hospital are please produce the medical records that Dr. Hammond has identified.
Would he be expected to redact them?
Would Dr. Hammond be expected to redact them? I'm not sure whether it is Dr. Hammond or the hospital, but one of those two would be expected to redact them. I think that the hospital who is suggesting that there are patient privacy interests here would be doing the redactions.
I recognize that you haven't looked at the documents, but do you have any sense, and I'll certainly pose this to Northwestern, how many records are at issue here?
Your Honor, I have no idea.
And let me ask you, these medical histories that you're requesting are from one doctor over a very short period of time for certain procedures. Isn't there a potential for identification even if the records are redacted?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. We've sought for a number of years, 3-year period, a number of patients, a number of procedures. I have no conceivable way of identifying who those patients are. I simply don't have that sort of deductive skill. I don't need age. I don't need marital status. I don't need husband's name. I don't need any of that material. I simply want the medical presentation
which would include medical history.
That is correct.
So other procedures, perhaps, that
appear. If it is relevant, if it is relevant to the procedure that was performed, yes, that is correct. But I have to suggest to you, Your Honor, that there is simply no way for us to determine that sort of information. We also have a protective order in place, Your Honor, that says that we cannot make any attempt to contact any of these people. We can't make any attempt to identify them. We simply have no interest in knowing who these individuals are.
Now, when you say protective order, are you referring to Judge Casey's January 26th order?
No, Your Honor, that is a separate order. There is a the date of the protective order. It may be January 26th. There were two orders.
I'm referring to the agreed protective order between the plaintiffs and the government.
Regarding confidential information,
yes.
That's correct. Yes, that is.
Now, will that be fully applicable here? If we were to reverse, would that be fully applicable?
Yes, Your Honor. These documents would be subject to that. Would be subject to that protective order.
Now, you mentioned the trial is starting soon. My impression was it's scheduled for next Tuesday.
Starts Monday, Your Honor.
Monday?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, if we were to agree with you about HIPAA and reversed, wouldn't Judge Koukouras, Chief Judge Koukouras, then have to undertake the standard benefit burden analysis in any subpoena case?
Your Honor, that the only undue burden arguments that the plaintiffs made below were related to their privacy argument. They now have tried to reconstruct that argument as to do this sort of benefit burden analysis of relevance, but that argument wasn't presented below.
No, that's not what you said in your brief. You said they were perfunctory. It's perfunctory. As is your discussion in your brief is also perfunctory. But sure, I mean, you don't even know how many records there are. Maybe Northwestern didn't know until Dr. Hamm identified them. Wouldn't Northwestern be entitled to ask the judge, you know, challenge the scope of the subpoena and say, you know, it's a big administrative burden? But actually, I was going to ask you something different. Well, it's related, but with a trial starting next week, how long is the trial going to last?
4 weeks, Your Honor.
Well, is it really feasible to think that these records could be redacted and presented and used in the trial?
Your Honor, I believe that they could be. I believe that the document.
Well, how long is it going to take to suppose there are several hundred of these things?
Your Honor,
redaction isn't that easy, you know.
I understand that, but I do not believe that it is such a burden. That
what are you going to tell Northwestern? They have 48 hours to redact 500 records?
We will work with Northwestern, depending upon.
Well, they're not going to let you redact.
No, I don't intend
well,
to redact
the
document.
Mean? What does it mean to work with them? Suppose, what kind of deadline are you going to give them?
We will try to arrange the trial in such a way that Dr. Hammond, if he is to testify, will not testify immediately, but will not be able to testify until.
But do you really? Yes, that's why I said 4 weeks. Do you really think all this can be done in 4 weeks?
I do believe it can be done in 4 weeks. As a matter of fact, Judge Cohn in Detroit has ordered a week and a half to comply with the Michigan subpoena, and we have had no problems from the University of Michigan in meeting their burden on a similar subpoena.
Suppose Northwestern said you were taking too much time. I mean, you were squeezing them too much, and Judge Koukouras agreed or disagreed, and then there'd be an appeal. And isn't it a little late for all this stuff?
Your Honor, the only reason it is late is that there has been a run out the clock process by Northwestern, and for this court to conclude that we're too late, it would be simply to.
Well, let me put it this way: what is the very best record that from your litigation standpoint, what would be the very best you would hope to find? The best redacted record that you could use to devastating effect in the trial?
Your Honor, there are a couple of situations where records would be useful to us. First of all, records would showing that this doctor is performing a procedure where another doctor has chosen a different procedure.
Wait, I don't understand you.
Why can't he just testify to that?
Because
why can't
in
he
his
just
in his
to why he uses certain procedures or he recommends
there would be
circumstances that procedure we use.
Your Honor, in the deposition of Dr. Hammond in this case, he could not remember particular circumstances where he'd used particular procedures, even those that were in his declaration.
Oh, of course he did. Look, he said things like there was this patient who had leukemia, there was a patient who had breast cancer and her treatment would be delayed, and there was something about chemotherapy, something with chemotherapy. So what would the patient records in those cases tell you that would be useful to you? I don't understand.
It would tell us. It would explain situations.
Do you think he's lying? Never had someone that, you know, the leukemia.
Your Honor, I have no way. I have no way of understanding the basis for his testimony without being able.
Well, I don't understand. Of course, you have the basis. Look, is it common for medical experts to be asked to produce patient records?
It is certainly common for testifying plaintiffs to who...
You haven't answered my question. Look, very often
Your Honor,
there are cases
haven't.
In which a doctor testifies that... So you had cases like, you know, you have a spinal problem. So there'll be testimony as to whether it's better to go in from the back or go in from the throat. Go in the throat, you endanger, you might hit the thyroid gland, the larynx. So experts will testify, but I've never heard of a case in which the the opposing party got hold of the doctor's patient records in order to impeach his testimony.
Your Honor,
do you know of any cases like that?
Justice Brennan's in-chambers opinion in the reproductive health systems case involved a medical malpractice claim where third-party patient abortion records were allowed to be released pursuant to a protective order that required redaction. That case is this case, except this case is...
But could you be concrete as to what you would... Say in the chemotherapy, the breast cancer case, we've seen a lot of patient records in Social Security disability cases, ERISA cases, ADA cases, so on. And they're usually, very sparse and semi-literate and so on. So what is it you'd really hope to find that would be pay dirt that would warrant the, burden of compliance with so little time?
Your Honor, our experts should be able to examine those records in order to determine if there were situations about the complications that would say that procedure was not the best procedure to be performed.
But what if Dr. Hammond, for example, said, I have had patients at stage 1 breast cancer, stage 2, stage 3 breast cancer, and this procedure is a medically necessary procedure. Why would you need patient records that reflected that he treated a stage 1 breast cancer, a stage 2 breast cancer?
Your Honor, there may be particular aspects of the treatment and of the patient's medical history that would reflect on the procedure that's chosen. So it may be that a generalized statement by Dr. Hammond would not suit the bill. And I should tell you, Your Honor, that when we asked him about particular patients that he described in his declaration, he gave answers like, I have no recollection of this because I don't necessarily track all these patients in my memory. So he was unable to recall particular situations in cross-examination. And it's very difficult to cross-examine a witness who doesn't have any recollection. And when there are records...
And of course, if he has no recollection of it and you can't cross him, couldn't you move in limine to the trial court? Did he not be able to give the...
We have moved in limine to strike the testimony.
That portion, at least.
We've actually moved to strike all of his testimony because we don't have his medical records, and we can't test claims that he's making, and he has no recollection on them in many circumstances. So we do think that this information is highly relevant.
And is that motion still pending?
It is still pending.
And let me ask you this. Is it your position when a doctor provides medical expert testimony based on the doctor's own experience in a federal question case like this that always opens the door to discovery of the doctor's patient records? Because that's certainly the direction you're moving us
toward. Well, Your Honor, let me say what's very unique about this case. In this case, this is not the sort of case where doctors are testifying to a general medical understanding in the textbooks and the treatises, in medical studies and the like. There doesn't exist any of that evidence out there. Congress found it, and Stenberg, the Stenberg court found that there are no medical studies to test this. So this case is very unique in that the clinical medical experience of the testifying doctors is the only grounds on which they move to have this law stricken as unconstitutional. There is something very different about this case than a case, a slip and fall case or an injury, to a particular part of the body where
that's because there's no medical difference between D&E and D&X.
Did Judge Casey, who's trying this case, is denied summary judgment by the plaintiffs?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in his in the court hearing, he seemed to emphasize pretty emphatically that he wanted these records, that they were discoverable and that they were to be produced. He, as best I can determine, has determined that they are relevant and that he wants the hospitals, actually the doctors, but the hospitals at this point, to produce them. I'm not sure, at least from my view, I sort of defer to what Judge Casey has determined is relevant. The question is, if these are redacted, the HIPAA sets out a pretty specific method for redaction.
Yes, Your Honor.
Have you already obtained records from other doctors that have been redacted?
Yes, Your Honor. In the Carhart litigation in Nebraska, we've received a large dump of documents from Dr. Carhart himself, who runs his own clinic, so doesn't have the control issues that other doctors have had in these litigations. So, yes, we have.
How, and as far as receiving those, the redaction, was that something that, you know, when you look at 164.514, it lays out certain criteria about what should be redacted?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, if every single piece of information in 164.514 is stripped, the sort of HIPAA strip. I'm not sure if those documents have been redacted in total, but the protective order said that anything that was identifying, that plaintiffs determined were identifying in that case, could be stripped. Whether there's technical compliance with 514 or not.
Well, my point is it doable? Because I recognize this may not be your fault that it's come to the down to the wire here, but the fact is that the case is going forward, apparently. Is this doable?
Your Honor,
based on what you say that Michigan...
Michigan was ordered by Judge Cohn. I was in Michigan a week and a half ago. Judge Cohn ordered production by Michigan by this coming Thursday, and we've heard nothing from Michigan that they can't do it. So, as far as I know, these documents were identified to Northwestern some time ago. So, the counsel may correct me on that, but I know that they've been identified.
I want to get back to the relevance issue, because I think that the respondents did preserve their argument, albeit perfunctorily, as you characterize it. And here in California, the court actually went through the documents to determine...
Your Honor, the court went through one document.
Don't interrupt.
I'm sorry.
And the court went through the documents to determine whether they were relevant. And doesn't it make sense that Judge Koukouras would do that here if we upheld the subpoena?
Your Honor, I believe that this court can, based on what Judge Koukouras has already said about relevancy, can reverse with directions to require the production of the documents. But Judge Koukouras' determination was based on the notion that there were medical studies that were in place that we could prove up our case, prove or disprove our case.
No, but look, he also said, granted, it was in a different context, as you pointed out, but he said on, this is JA 110, he said, government sees these records on a possibility, may find something, etc., you know, can impeach Hammond. Government ignores how little, if any, probative value lies within these patient records. And when contrasted with the potential loss of privacy that would ensue, etc., when the patient is not a party to third parties, of course, the balance of harms severely outweighs the loss to the government. Now, it's true he used that as the predicate for his creation of a new privilege, but isn't it the sort of analysis that, as Judge Williams said, that's what the district judge in California went through, and isn't that what someone, us or Judge, or Chief Judge Koukouras, would have to go through before authorizing this?
Well, I think the district court has already done the sort of analysis that you're talking about, and I think it's clearly erroneous, Your Honor. I think this court can reverse that determination.
Well, I have to say, there is a privacy interest, even with all your redactions. Also, you really worried me what you just said about, in the Carhart case, there wasn't technical compliance with 112.514. How can that be? It's not admissible. Does that violate the regulation?
No, Your Honor, that is not even remotely correct. 514 is a provision which allows for redactions of information, of identifying information. If the information is redacted in accordance with 514, HIPAA doesn't apply at all. But what we have done is it complied with a different provision that assumes that HIPAA does apply, and that is 512E.
Wait, you lost me. You mean 512E, which doesn't even require redaction, is all you have to comply with?
That is correct. That is
why are we
correct.
Talking about redaction and all your...
Because that answers the plaintiff's privacy concerns, Your Honor. We are willing to comply with 514, but it is not necessary here, Your Honor. 512 is the HIPAA compliance that we need to do here.
Wait, this is really strange, but see, yeah, it really bothers me. Look, so you would agree, wouldn't you, that that 512E applies to, I mean, it does create a privilege, right?
I'm sorry.
512E, it defines a privilege.
It absolutely does not, Your Honor.
It governs disclosure in judicial proceedings.
And it authorizes disclosure according to judicial proceedings simply by entry of a court order. That is not a privilege. That is actually is a contemplation of disclosure in judicial proceedings. And we've cited to this court three cases, including Pennsylvania v. Ritchie from the United States Supreme Court.
So you're saying 512E doesn't...
It doesn't address privilege.
It has no restrictions?
It is a privacy law. It is not an evidentiary privilege law. And
it says disclosures for judicial and administrative proceedings. It limits disclosures, doesn't it? Does it limit disclosures in judicial proceedings?
In the absence of a court order or a protective order, disclosures can't occur. But as long as the court says you may disclose, and that is pursuant to a subpoena, then there is no privilege. There simply is not an evidentiary privilege that is created by HIPAA. It is something much different. It is a privacy rule, but not every privacy rule creates a rule of evidence for federal court.
I have want to focus on one other thing with HIPAA. You say it is not a privacy rule, but HIPAA does preempt, except for a certain exception, correct?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I couldn't hear your question.
HIPAA preempts the state law.
Yes.
Judge Kokoris went and said that this was not preempted. He said that because the state law was more strict than the federal law, that the federal law did not preempt. However, he didn't go far enough. He didn't go to the point where the exception also says that subject to another section, that health insurance, portability, etc., relates to the privacy of the individuality, it relates to the privacy or individuality, individually identifiable health information.
That's correct.
That means it's if it's properly redacted, it doesn't apply. Therefore, it is preempted.
Your Honor, that is absolutely correct.
And why don't you say that? Because we're getting all wandering all over the place. It seems to me HIPAA, just as Judge Casey went through it, goes right down the line and shows that he said it sort of an afterthought because you have a protective order, that's all you need. But he also added that if it's properly redacted, it's not individually identifiable. Therefore, it is not, the privacy is not affected according to the federal law.
The HIPAA rules don't apply at all to 514 stripped material. Individually,
this is what Judge Kokoris went through in his analysis. He applied HIPAA, and so did Judge Casey.
If
you apply HIPAA, you win.
Well, if you apply HIPAA, you win, but what's important also about the Savings Clause, Your Honor, and HHS said this several times, it was not intended to expand the scope of state law. State privilege law applies where it normally applies, which is in state court. And here, the state privilege law that plaintiffs have relied upon is simply a rule that governs state proceedings. So the Savings Clause, as HHS said in several times in interpreting it, was not intended to expand the scope of state law or to make it applicable where it would not otherwise be. So regardless of how you come at it, if you come at it from what the meaning of the Savings Clause is, you don't get there. If you come at it from the fact that HIPAA is not a privilege law, therefore 501 of the Federal Rules of Evidence would preempt state law, you get there. And if you come at it from the aspect that HIPAA doesn't apply at all because this is strict information, you get there. We've taken every precaution to protect the privacy of the plaintiff.
You mentioned the Illinois statute. The Illinois physician-patient privilege statute just refers to, says no physician or surgeon shall be permitted to disclose any information. It doesn't say anything about hospitals. Has it been interpreted to cover hospitals?
Your Honor, as far as I'm aware, I'm not aware that it has. I must tell you, however, that I have not spent a lot of time digging into the intricacies of Illinois state law, because I don't believe...
It doesn't look very intricate. It says no physician...
Well, I mean the case law, Your Honor.
If it doesn't apply to hospitals, then the case is academic.
I would agree with
that. I would have thought you'd want to invest some time in deciding whether the case is academic or not, because the privilege is inapplicable.
Well, I don't believe that the privilege law applies in any way, shape, or form. It is an Illinois Code of Civil Procedure provision.
You're not getting my point.
I understand your point entirely, and I agree with it, but I don't have...
If you want us to decide complicated questions, there might be a very simple answer, which is it doesn't matter whether Illinois or federal law applies.
I understand your Honor's question.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question about the chilling effect. Because one of the arguments you make in your brief is that the chilling effect on these third parties isn't a realistic possibility, but isn't it possible that with the national media coverage of the release of non-parties' abortion records without their knowledge or consent, because now that there's this protective order, they don't have to get notice, they don't have to consent, wouldn't that create a chilling effect?
Your Honor, there will be no public disclosure of this information. The protective order requires that if we use this information in the Southern District in New York, it must be done under seal. We cannot publicly disclose this information, even in the trial. So we have to be very careful about how we use it at trial. We have taken every measure possible to preserve the anonymity of the women who are involved here. We're very sensitive to that. But I have to point you again to some of the cases that we've cited to this court. The Doe v. Septa case in the Third Circuit was all about AIDS-treating drugs, and whether there was a privacy interest in the disclosure of the fact that certain people were treated with a particular AIDS-treating drug. The court there said the only time there's a privacy interest that's implicated is when the name is hooked up to the individual who gets the drugs. And when the name is redacted, and here we're going well beyond the names being redacted, when that is redacted, there is no privacy interest. The same thing, again, was in Justice Brennan's in-chambers opinion in Reproductive Services. There he said, as long as there's a protective order that's designed to preserve the anonymity of the patient, the interest in privacy is minimized or at least met.
So suppose the state allowed disclosure of medical records without a court order. Wouldn't 164.512e prevent that disclosure?
Without a court order, yes, Your Honor.
Then it would operate as a privilege.
No, Your Honor, it would operate as a privacy rule.
Oh, please. What it would mean is that if someone in a state court wanted to subpoena a medical record and there was no court order, the state court would be forbidden to enforce that subpoena, would it not?
Isn't that
a privilege?
That is correct, but if a court...
Isn't that a privilege?
No, Your Honor, it is not a privilege.
Well, you're just using words. Because a privilege is something which prevents someone from using, you know, otherwise admissible and probative evidence.
No, a privilege is something that does not contemplate court disclosure. And here, HIPAA contemplates court disclosure. It contemplates court disclosure as long as the subpoena issues. That is enough under HIPAA.
Well, there are restrictions on the subpoena. But suppose a case where someone comes into court saying, I have this medical record, and it's very probative, and I'd like to put it in evidence. It's true, I don't have a court order, I don't have a subpoena, I just have someone's medical record that I got. And wouldn't HIPAA prevent the use of that, the disclosure of that in the litigation?
HIPAA in the...
Would it or wouldn't?
No, it wouldn't, and I will tell you why. It is a privacy rule, but HHS said in their regulations, in their comments to the regulation, we leave it to the courts to decide whether there is evidentiary use of information that does not comply with our regulations. We're not here to determine evidentiary privileges.
But 212B says it's the standard for disclosures in judicial proceedings. That's what it is. How can it not regulate disclosure in judicial proceedings?
Your Honor, this court owes deference to HHS's determination that it is beyond the scope of their mandate to create specific...
Why would it be? I don't understand that. Of course it could. They could have a regulation which said no medical records are ever to be disclosed. What would prevent them from doing that?
There was nothing to prevent them from doing
that. Of course,
that's
the whole point.
But that is not what they did.
The question is what they did. And if you look at the title of 212B, it says Standards for Disclosure in Judicial Proceedings.
We do not intend for the privacy regulations
to
interfere.
What are you reading for? What are you reading for?
I'm reading from 65 Federal Register.
Well, there's a difference between what they say in their regulation and what they say they're saying in their regulation. Anyway,
Your Honor, the HHS is entitled to deference in its interpretation of
it. Why don't they just change the regulation and make it intelligible? But look, before you sit down, look.
That's beyond the
scope. I don't understand. I think your subpoena is misdrafted. Look. You've limited it to 2003 or to 2 years.
Look, 2 or 3 years, yeah.
What if you ask him about his leukemia, his chemotherapy, and something like that, and it turns out that that was more than 2 years ago? Then you don't have any record.
But that was an attempt to ease the burden on the plaintiff.
But on the other hand, you're very curious in what he has to say about these fetal deformity cases. But they're irrelevant.
I'm sorry, why are they irrelevant, Your Honor?
Because the issue is whether you need a health exam. There's no fetal deformity.
Plaintiffs have said that this procedure advances the health of the woman in certain medical conditions.
Fetal deformity has nothing to do with that. That's the fetus's problem. That's not the health problem.
Your Honor, I couldn't agree with you more, but that's
right.
That's not my claim.
This is a fishing expedition. You haven't tailored your subpoena to the specific testimony that he wants to give about the proposition that his procedure is sometimes necessary to protect the health of the mother. Because you go out into this fetal deformity stuff and you have this artificial year cutoff.
Your Honor, the artificial year cutoff may have been a tactical misjudgment on our part, but it was only to make this an easier exercise.
No, it wasn't. You just want hundreds of these things. You don't need hundreds.
Look, well, you're saying on the one hand that I want to
do
and I want to
do what I'm saying. Look, there's one more point. We'll let you rebut too. We're not in a hurry this afternoon. I don't understand the difference between the health and the life business. So maybe, I mean, this maybe strays into merits, but I'm curious about this. So if he says, for example, that if the pregnancy is not interrupted by one of these operations, the woman is going to delay a treatment for cancer, isn't that life-threatening rather than just health-impairing?
Well, I, Your Honor, as a physician, it's hard for me to answer that with
really?
Simplicity.
Really?
But I don't believe so.
You're really that ignorant that you think it's a matter of indifference whether you start your cancer treatment when you get the cancer 5 years later?
Your Honor, I met with the former Surgeon General yesterday who explained to me in that very circumstance that the chemotherapy could proceed, and the only threat is to the life of the child, not to the life of the mother. So the chemotherapy could proceed.
No. My question is hypothetical. If delaying chemotherapy or other cancer treatment is bad for the woman's health, is that just a health thing for which there's no exception in the statute, or is that come under the definition of life?
Which is in the statute.
Right.
Your Honor, it very well could, but I'm not a medical doctor, okay. And I don't know the answer to that question for sure.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Kaufman.